Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. If there's an in-the-know North Carolinian when it comes to the state's rapidly changing demographics, the realities that confront our fast-growing Latinx population, and the implications that these changes herald for state politics, it's veteran journalist and UNC Chapel Hill journalism professor Paul Quadros. Earlier this week, I caught up with Quadros and got a chance to ask him about these and other related issues, and some of his observations provided cause for concern. In particular, Quadros is deeply worried that we haven't seen the worst impacts yet when it comes to evictions, homelessness, and other impacts of the coronavirus recession. He also noted that while some people may assume otherwise, the Latinx community is anything but a monolithic voting bloc. Well, Professor Paul Quadros, welcome to News and Views. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, for the last many years, you have sort of chronicled poverty and the economic divide in our country, the racial economic divide in our country. This is a situation right now, frankly, that seems to be worsening, especially in light of the pandemic. Talk to us about where we are and how this is impacting, if that's not too broad of a question, how that's impacting politics nationally and here in North Carolina.
Right. I think it's generally well known that, you know, the country, there are sort of two countries here in the United States, the people that are becoming very, very, very wealthy and everybody else. That's been trending for a number of years, even going back to John Edwards's Two Americas theme, which seems to have grown even wider. And then the recent events of the pandemic illustrating that and revealing those harsh realities between different groups of people in the U.S., and how they're coping and dealing and becoming infected with the coronavirus, and the response, both from the federal government and from local governments to it. All of that has revealed the precarious nature of many people in the U.S. and how they've been living over the past several decades. And it's laid bare, you know, their vulnerability to not only poverty, but to deadly disease and to other things as well. So it's all coming to the fore at this point. And I would say that right now we're climbing up the crest of the wave before it breaks in terms of impact of what's going to happen to people who are renting, people who are homeowners, with regard to being unemployed and not being able to pay the rent or to pay for their mortgages. We're going to see something happen in the next 6 months that is going to be something we haven't seen in a long time. So
initially, of course, the federal government did some important stepping up to the plate, provided some genuine relief to people in the form of enhanced unemployment insurance benefits. State government did some stuff in terms of utility shutoffs and eviction moratoria. But it seems like the momentum for that has been lost in recent weeks and months. And as you say, it feels very much as if things are going to start to hit the fan here pretty soon. And I guess one question is, will that have any impact on the politics of our nation? Will that have an impact on the election, or is it going to be so delayed in its impact that people will be into 2021 and will be past the election?
That's a very good question. I think we don't know the answer to that yet, but more than likely things will break after the election. So it may begin to start to have an impact, but what kind of impact it has on the actual election remains to be seen, especially when we take into account mail-in voting that's going to be happening and early voting that'll be happening. And the impact of this sort of wave that's going to hit us may not be felt until January, February, or in the early spring. And then we're going to start to see some people who are going to be evicted from their homes and out on the streets.
Yeah, we talk about a wave hitting. I guess what you're really talking about is widespread suffering. We're talking about homelessness. We're talking about people in the street. We're talking about many, many millions more people lacking health care. It's a pretty dire picture.
Yeah, well, it's dire because people have already been suffering. And now you add in COVID and the collapse of the economy and the inability of people to go to work safely and to have their children go to school safely. That's all impacting now and revealing what's been a precarious state for a long time now. When I say things are breaking, this is the last straw that breaks the camel's back. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see people who are going to suffer and be tossed out of their homes.
know, even before this was all happening, we saw significant demographic changes happening in the American body politic. We see it here in North Carolina. We see a definite trend in terms of, some people describe it as the browning of America. There was an expectation, I think, in many circles that even before the pandemic, even before these kinds of stark economic divides were really brought into sharp relief, that our nation was trending in a direction in which politics would tend to reflect that transformation that was happening demographically. But if it's happening, it's happening pretty slowly so far. What are your thoughts on that issue here, particularly here in North Carolina, where we see such a steady transformation in the sort of way our state looks?
Right. There are two demographic trends in the United States. One is, as you mentioned, the browning of America, where the country is becoming more ethnically and racially diverse. And within that equation is the increasing number of people who identify as Latino or Latinx, as some people say. Mm-hmm. And the increasing driver of population growth in the United States from Latinos here in North Carolina. Our population growth over the past 20, 30 years has been largely due to Latinos coming into the state and then having kids in the state. About 25% of the population growth that we've seen in North Carolina is from that one demographic group. But at the same time, there's also this demographic trend called the graying of America. Mm-hmm. And that's where we've seen baby boomers who have entered into the retirement years and are leaving us year by year, day by day. And so we see both those demographic trends add to the sort of political tension that's in the United States today between very young black and brown people, Latinos and African Americans and Asians, and an aging white population, and the clash of values and politics that plays out, that we've seen play out over the past year and several years. In terms of representation, we're just beginning to see, you know, some signs of representation. So we have communities here in North Carolina that are majority Latino communities, like Siler City. That's a majority Latino community. It's about 50-some percent Latino. That's a stark change from like 1990 when it was like 1%. We're starting to see people who are running for office for the very first time. There's a candidate in Chatham County where Siler City is located named Franklin Gomez Flores, who's running for county commissioner. There is a candidate in Alamance County who's running for a state house seat, and his name is Ricky Hurtado. And both these guys represent, you know, that second generation of the migration that's happened to North Carolina. And their initial forays into civic life, civic duty, and participating in the political process. And we're going to see, you know, which one of these guys is going to be elected this fall. And might very possibly be the first Latino elected in this state from this immigrant background. That's going to be really interesting because it's going to open the doors if one of them gets elected to other people wanting to participate in the process. But this is going to be a gradual process, I think, that's going to happen. It's a generational process. So Latinos in North Carolina are no longer an immigrant population. They are a settler population. And so I don't look at them as immigrants. I look at them as settlers. They are beyond the first generation. They're in the second generation, almost third generation now, of having children here. And that's going to mean all kinds of different impacts for our state because it's a young population. Its median age is like 27 years old. And so, I mean, they're as old as my graduate students. And they're having kids now. So we can see that particular population, that cohort, continuing to grow in our state, to add to the population of our state.
We're talking with Professor Paul Quadros of the University of North Carolina. So as we come near the end of our time together, I want to ask you about the 2020 election and about the motivations of minority communities, particularly the Latino community in North Carolina. Some people say that, you know, there's a natural inclination to be opposed to President Trump and his party because of the anti-immigration stance that the president has taken. But it's clearly not a monolithic viewpoint amongst Latino voters. And some people feel that there needs to be more of an intentional effort by Vice President Biden, by Governor Cooper, to affirmatively reach out to these communities, not just to count on them because of opposition to Trump policies.
I think that's true. So it's almost as if some of those politicians are thinking, hey, they got nowhere else to go, so we can sort of ignore them. But because this is such a young population, you know, it's sort of like branding in advertising. You hook the young consumer early for your brand to keep them later. And what the Democrats might be failing to realize is that unless they hook this young Latino population now by appealing to them beyond, you know, hey, it's not Trump, it's not the Republican Party, they might lose them. I mean, this is a young group of people, and they are open-minded in many respects. So when things happen, like Governor Cooper recently pulled back on a promise to issue an executive order to protect essential workers in agriculture and in the food processing industry, in the meat packing industry, many young Latinos are aware of that, mm-hmm. and they're talking about it now on social media. And so, you know, what kind of impact will that have on turnout and on voting? What kind of impact will that have on the brand for the Democratic Party? And will it, you know, provide an opportunity for the Republican Party to take advantage of that in the future? We don't know. But things are really up for grabs for this population. But, you know, the population is growing and it is going to continue to grow. And it is not monolithic. It is incredibly diverse. On the national level, I mean, you, in terms of its diversity, you go to Florida and you can see how diverse it is, where things are really up for grabs and Vice President Biden's trying to play catch up in Florida, in a state that they thought was in play. And that's because of the ethnic diversity of Florida. You have Cuban Americans and Venezuelan Americans who are going to be supporters of the president, and Puerto Ricans and Mexican Americans who are going to be supporters maybe of the Democratic candidate. But that's all up for grabs and in play. And both parties have got to appeal to these sort of different groups, ethnicities, and desires of the Latino community.
To a certain extent, it's almost an impossible task because just like the, well, soon-to-be minority white community, there are people of means, people of wealth, people who are living on the edge financially. And it's probably not surprising that people who are comfortably well off but happen to be Latinx would be more likely to support, let's say, the Republican Party than they would the Democrats, just as is often the case with other demographic groups.
I think that's true. So this is why when you have a young population now, both parties, you know, should be working to sort of build up their brand among that young population to get them to commit to a particular political viewpoint.
And I presume that with populations like that, that social media is critically important these days. I guess we can't really overstate how critically important that's become in the American political scene these days in 2020.
Especially for young Latinos or young Latinx people, because they get most of their information from social media. Those are mediums that, you know, both parties have to reach out to. And they're, you know, the parties are sophisticated enough to do that. But these are big consumers of social media, and that's where they get their news.
Professor Paul Quadros of the UNC School of Journalism, we thank you so much for being with us, for all your fine work on this important topic. We wish you the best going forward. We look forward perhaps to checking in after the election and getting your reflections on how things went.
Thank you very much for your time. I'm happy to speak to you about this, and we'll see what happens this fall.
Coming up next, there are grounds for both optimism and concern in the battle against COVID-19, and we'll hear the latest from the woman spearheading North Carolina's efforts. Stay with us.